is an incredible privilege for me to stand here and look out at all of you and get to deliver the state of the nation's immunization. Since we met last year in Kansas City, I have been privileged to get to travel to Nevada, to New England and New York, from the Pacific Northwest to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Everywhere I go, I am struck with the incredible immunization champions that we have. And I really want to thank you for everything that you do. Whether you are developing local or state policies or strengthening the immunization information systems that connect vaccine records to the people who need them, whether you're carrying out outreach efforts or investigating outbreaks, you make an incredible difference, and you are my inspiration. I thought quite a bit about how to capture this year's stories in today's talk. Some of my closer friends may tell you that I sort of agonized about it over the past couple weeks. We've had quite a year. There have been some wonderful days, but there have also been some difficult days. Some of the difficult days seem to be stretching into the weeks at times. But through the good and the bad, I think that our commitment to a shared mission helped to get us through and bring us here, tornadoes or no tornadoes, to join together in Atlanta, to reinvigorate ourselves, to recharge, maybe to relax a little, and mostly to remember what a difference immunizations make and what a difference you make in bringing those immunizations to the people who need them. Today is St. Patrick's Day. There will be no more limericks. But I did want to start with a few words about St. Patrick. Of course, we can think many things about Ireland's patron saint, but what I learned about him when I was in grade school was that he was nationally revered because he kept the snakes out of Ireland. So I thought maybe protection against snakes would be a good metaphor for today's talk. Now, in 2008, snakes are not exactly at the top of our prevention agenda. But you have to admit, they are pretty universally feared. There's another anniversary that I wanted to mark as well. It's actually been 75 years this month since President Franklin Delano Roosevelt reminded the nation that we had nothing to fear but fear itself. Those were difficult economic times, and fear was rampant. Inoculating the country against fear and its downward spiral was a powerful charge. But of course, many of us in this audience remember President Roosevelt for another one of his protection initiatives, one that was for him even more personal. Through his leadership of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis and the Associated March of Dimes, we can trace the roots of today's immunization system to the battle against polio launched in those years. Millions of citizens contributed to tackle polio, and they contributed to the development of vaccines for polio and to immunization of the country. So I think that St. Patrick and FDR were both really protection pioneers. So often when we talk about protection, we start talking about the emotion of fear, and I hope that we'll be able to talk about protection and immunizations in ways that don't prey on people's fears, but help elevate us to the true promise of protection. Immunizations are the most effective public health tool to prevent harm from happening to people. And what I'd like to do today in this update is celebrate protection through the theme of immunization. The state of our early childhood protection in this country is strong. We have sustained high levels of protection against the major childhood diseases, and the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine protection rates have increased dramatically over the last year or so. Now, I look forward to future years when I can show this kind of uptick in the rotavirus vaccine coverage, in hepatitis A in young children, and in influenza. But this year, I want to probe just a little bit about the pneumococcal vaccine success and the protection this offers. Sometimes the pneumococcal vaccine protection, frankly, seems too good to be true, almost a knight in shining armor. There you go. Okay, there's your knight. We could do that again, but we're not going to. Pneumococcal vaccination of young children has reduced invasive disease in kids. It's reduced reduced pneumonia and antibiotic use and ear infections. And by reducing transmission, it's reduced invasive disease in adults. It turns out it's also reduced healthcare spending. Two important papers that came out this year from Fengjun Zhou, who's in our Immunization Services Division, described the direct medical costs associated with all-cause pneumonia and otitis media before and after the pneumococcal conjugate vaccines were introduced. You can see $310 million less is being spent these days on all-cause pneumonia in children, and $460 million less is being spent on otitis media. Truly remarkable savings. More and more states are achieving 90% coverage with the pneumococcal vaccine series, and I'm looking forward to even more states joining this green initiative in the years to come. So the state of early childhood protection has been pretty good, but there were some times where our protection fell short. Of course, I am speaking of mid-December, when we learned that 1 million doses of HIV vaccine was being recalled from the childhood supply. Our program experts, the pharmaceutical companies, scrambled to shore up all the available doses we could find. We issued interim recommendations, reminding providers to defer the booster dose of HIV vaccine in healthy children. We prioritized the pediatric stockpile that we had for the highest risk, most vulnerable children, Native Americans, American Indians, or Alaska Native children who have extraordinarily high rates of HIV disease. Now, it is fortuitous and, in fact, just wonderful that tonight's Hilleman lecture, Dr. Mathieu Santosham, will be speaking about the incredible contributions that Native Americans have made to infectious disease prevention and control here and around the world. For those of you who don't know him, Dr. Santosham has spent 3 decades devoted to infectious disease prevention with the Native populations. He will bridge from the Native Americans to the global story in tonight's lecture, which will be in the same auditorium at 6 p.m., and I hope most of you will be able to make that. So sometimes our protection did fall short, but other times it seemed like we had more protection than we could use. This year, we broke all records for how much influenza vaccine was produced and distributed, but we're also on track to break some records in how much of the influenza vaccine goes unused. We broke records for how much influenza vaccine was available during October, and this was just wonderful, even though we've been promoting the messages to continue vaccinating in December, January, and beyond. It's a good year when we have a lot of vaccine circulating in October. No one, and I know all of you are in this category, no one who has lived through the influenza vaccination seasons more than 1 year in a row would ever complain about having too much flu vaccine. On the other hand, there are some principles of supply and demand, and we know that the manufacturers will not keep producing doses if demand is not able to keep up with it. This year, we have some new resources that are going out to all the states to help you find ways that work for you to increase demand for seasonal flu vaccine. And we're optimistic about what you'll be able to do with those dollars. Not everybody who can benefit from protection uses it. We are really good at getting little kids to take protective steps, but we are not very good at the adolescent or young adult population. Adolescents and young adults are notorious for seeking risks and shunning precautions. And of course, as Dr. Jenkins described, we have a long way to go in immunization coverage in adolescents. I am really optimistic, though, that there's a lot of community interest and innovation, and that these tools are tremendous, and that we will make these graphs look really different in the years ahead. So I'm looking forward to sharing updates on coverage in teens in the future. Unfortunately, my optimism, which is almost endless, starts to get stuck when it comes to immunization of seniors. We have really hit a plateau in the influenza and pneumococcal polysaccharide vaccination rates in people 65 and up. Now we have an exciting new tool for seniors, the zoster or shingles vaccine for people 60 years of age and over. But unfortunately, there are a lot of complexities with that vaccine right now. the challenges of reimbursement through Medicare Part D, the complexity of storage and handling of that vaccine. I have to admit, my mother's still trying to get it, so we have a long road to go there. But I want to mention that one of the resources that's available for you all is that we're offering a competition this year for the states to compete for resources to develop adult immunization action plans. And we hope the states that receive those funds will develop some best practices that we can share throughout the country. Okay, you're going to imagine what I'm saying here. Sometimes protection can be unfamiliar or guide us to unfamiliar territories. The Hepatitis B initiative took our immunization programs into some unfamiliar and sometimes unwelcome places. We prioritized Section 317 vaccine purchase dollars to go towards purchase of hepatitis B vaccine so that we could help you help implement the ACIP recommendations to vaccinate high-risk adults in the high-risk venues where they congregate. This led to partnerships between immunizations and a number of other programs, and it's too soon for us to say what impact this effort will have, but I was really heartened on a recent state visit when one program director described to me the immunization partnership with correctional facilities. The staff involved in this program described it was really morale boosting for both the immunizations and the correctional staff, as well as, of course, the correctional inmates, to see an ability to make a difference in such a high risk and high need area. Sometimes protection can be uncomfortable. Even the idea of the honey, that sweet honey that's at the end of the process, is not enough to help us get through the bee stings. There are some extra credit points if you know which CDC immunization guru is the keeper of these bees. Yeah, okay, Lance has the answer, but it's not Lance. Okay, so I'm talking about bee stings. Everybody who's in a state knows what I'm about to talk about. The Vaccine Management Business Improvement Project, VMBIP. We affectionately call it VMBIP. Notice the 34 grantees that have turned green. But we know that turning green has a lot of meanings. And transitioning to the centralized distribution system does not mean that the pain is over. I just want to stop here and thank every one of you who has been part of the planning, the implementation, the problem identification, the troubleshooting, the people who called for continuous quality improvement to be part of this program. I really appreciate the voices that we have heard from and the very hard work that has gotten us this far. We have honey at the end of the road. Our goal is an efficient, effective, insured, customer service-oriented, seamless, centralized distribution process. It's going to take all of us working together to get there. We're having a special session tomorrow at 12:15 across the way there in Grand Salon D that will be devoted to VMBIP. I urge those of you who are working in this area or fearing the future transition that you'll be making to come to that session, because I hope we'll be able to work together to get this program to succeed. Sometimes protection can be unpopular, sometimes even controversial. Now, in immunizations, we're not trying to take the greasy French fries out of the mouths of New Yorkers. We know better than that. But we are taking on some fairly bold initiatives, and some of our initiatives are equally unpopular. Now, it's been 2 years since we recommended HPV vaccine for girls, and I think things are settling down. People aren't writing me hate mail anymore about this, and you don't hear too much about our girls being guinea pigs. Perhaps we're getting to that competition that Dr. Jenkins described when we hear about Australia having finished immunizing all the teenage girls in the country. It's really remarkable what some other countries are managing to accomplish right now. But 3 weeks ago, our Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices did make a pretty bold recommendation. They recommended flu shots for all children up to the age of 18, a major immunization change. We know that the pediatricians of the country had already ordered next year's flu vaccine before these recommendations were issued. we also know that everyone who runs an immunization program is going to need some time to plan how the heck you're going to do this. On the other hand, there are some areas that were just raring to go to be able to scale up on pilots that they had been carrying out, and that a lot of places said they were going to need a clear and strong recommendation before resources could be mobilized to make this a reality. So I think that in the next several years, our individual and our collective efforts are going to make this promise of protecting children against influenza into a reality. Sometimes our protection just doesn't work. We have had numerous outbreaks of whooping cough, of pertussis in schools and hospitals, and many of you have been very busy with these efforts. The fault is likely with waning immunity from the childhood DTaP series, and now we have Tdap vaccine, a whooping cough containing vaccine formulated for teenagers and adults. We hope that the Tdap implementation will lead to a decrease in these really disruptive and difficult outbreaks. But sometimes it was the lab tests that didn't work the way that we wanted them to. Not everything that we thought was pertussis turned out to be pertussis. This is from the MMWR last August, and it's reporting a few different outbreaks of not pertussis that were responded to aggressively. CDC has a new commitment to improve the laboratory standardization and detection of pertussis, and we're looking forward to working with you on improving that action. We're also really working on improving response to respiratory outbreaks of unknown origin. We've developed a toolkit and website that's being focus tested right now, and we're looking forward to sharing this with you in the future. In June, at the annual meeting of the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists, we're having a special session on respiratory outbreaks, and we're looking to hear from you at the state's level what kinds of issues will really help you make a difference in the response, detection, and control of these problems. You know, we are a few blocks from the CNN Center, and I have just been so jealous of those guys with the maps on election night. So I asked our graphics guys, could you help me get one of those really fancy maps? And, you know, so I love this flag. You know, I could just sit here staring at the flag. But this is going to be our year in detecting and responding to selected vaccine-preventable diseases. We are so fortunate to have high levels of immunization coverage in the country, but vaccine-preventable diseases are in a lot of other places, and they have a way of finding their way to our door. I think we all remember that poor little Japanese boy. He came to play in the International Little League World Series. I'm sure it was the high point of his life, but he was sidelined with measles. And then he spread his measles, and we got a college in Texas that had to respond, and an airport in Michigan, and on and on. We had a real problem with mumps a couple years ago, but it's not gone. A university in Maine, and I understand this weekend, I think a university in a mid-Atlantic state that I won't mention has also been dealing with mumps in the college campuses. And of course, although pneumococcal disease is way down nationally, there's been drug-resistant pneumococcal infections, including some outbreaks in homeless populations. I mentioned the pertussis challenge we've been having, including in a school system in Mississippi. And then our public health colleagues in St. Croix had to cope with a pertussis outbreak in a boarding school. Of course, this was detected right at the time of the Christmas holidays, meaning that the public health staff and the lucky EIS officers that spent the holidays in St. Croix had to contact all these other state health departments, probably you were them, and try to find these students and offer them protection. It's been a tough influenza season for us. One of the problems has been the oseltamivir-resistant influenza, including in a long-term care facility in Illinois. And then most recently, there was a really challenging outbreak of measles. A family traveled to Switzerland. One of the children wasn't immunized, brought measles back to the community. The child went to a charter school where 10% of the students were unimmunized because of personal belief exemptions. A large number of students had to be vaccinated urgently or have been excluded for extended periods. Measles made its way into a pediatrician's office in that town and unfortunately infected some children, some babies who were too young to be immunized. someone else with measles made their way on an airplane to Hawaii, requiring the Hawaii Health Department to get in on the contact, investigation, and response. I know I've left so many of your outbreaks, your frontline responses, off of this map. Now, anyone who's feeling left out, you are all included in the urgent response that is what I call the tsunami of the HIV vaccine recall. So thank you. Thank you for that incredible response. Extraordinary goals sometimes require extreme forms of protection. When I look back at the immunization goals and the immunization accomplishments of this past year, some of them are really out of this world. The World Measles Initiative set a target of 90% reduction of worldwide measles deaths by the year 2010. And we've reported now more than 60% worldwide death reduction. In Africa, where the ministries of health, the governments, and the Measles Initiative made extra efforts, 91% reduction in measles deaths has been accomplished. This is truly extraordinary. But I think people here know measles and know that it's not over. More babies are being born every day, and we really need to work hard together to sustain these gains and achieve this extraordinary goal for the world. Sometimes protection can be pretty complicated. So this is my very weak way of introducing the next slide, which is the most complicated slide I have. So the Polio Eradication Initiative is another extraordinary global program. Things are getting fairly complicated with that. We're seeing great progress on some fronts and some challenges on others. Type 1 polio virus disease is way down in 2007 compared to 2006. Part of that is because we've been using more of the monovalent type 1 oral polio virus vaccine, which has much higher efficacy against type 1 strains than our usual trivalent vaccine. Well, unfortunately, in India, where you see this wonderful drop in type 1 disease, they've also been suffering a smaller but relevant increase in type 3 disease. Type 3 slipping through when greater use of monovalent vaccine, which didn't include type 3, was happening. So this is being managed, and I think we'll get through this. Not even shown on this slide is the increase in type 2 vaccine-derived polioviruses that have been a challenge in some communities where coverage is very, very low. Even with the challenges, we can look back to 20 years ago when the Polio Eradication Initiative worldwide goal was set, and we can see that from 125 countries where polio was circulating, there are only 4 left where we have never interrupted transmission of polio. 2 of those, Pakistan and Afghanistan, have very few cases, but the cases are occurring in a very challenging area along the border that's quite insecure, where conflict is frequent. The Polio Eradication Initiative, working with partners, has been negotiating days of tranquility to be able to bring immunization through the conflict area to protect those at risk. You know, I think that sometimes the protection associated with vaccines is a lot like Gary Cooper. This is Gary Cooper for the younger folks in the audience. He's walking tall in the movie High Noon. This is the strong, silent type of protection. Gets the job done without a lot of fanfare. When immunizations are the most successful, you don't hear anything at all. So I think it's 2008, you know, we need a different Hollywood icon for the immunization program. Maybe something like this. So again, I have the most extraordinary staff at CDC. Susie Childry is a graphics artist who worked with me on this talk. And I said, Susie, I want to show immunizations like an Andy Warhol, Marilyn Monroe. She said, no problem. So this is the immunization success story. This is immunizations making a difference, reducing death and disability, reducing hospitalizations, reducing all kinds of terrible things. And I really want t-shirts made out of this thing. So I think I've shown you this slide before. These children are polio pioneers. They're kids who participated in the great national experiment that tested the Salk polio vaccine in 1954 and 55. Like St. Patrick, like FDR, these young pioneers paved the way for a better future. I think that every one of you is a protection pioneer, braving some challenges, overcoming adversity, committed to bringing protection to people and communities. The pioneers didn't set off across the country in order to circle the wagons, to fend off the menaces or threats that threatened them. We may remember them for their bravery in the face of those difficulties, but the early pioneers, like all of you, were driven by a compelling purpose to make a better future. Because of the work that you're doing, we are much better off today than we were yesterday. Immunizations are saving lives and dollars, strengthening partnerships, and even as we see days of tranquility in Afghanistan and Pakistan, they're even promoting peace. Because of your efforts in your programs and offices, your clinics, even in your committee meetings, we will be much better off tomorrow. So thank you.